James Tobin writes in his new biography of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, "It is a truism to say Roosevelt overcame polio to become president. It is just as accurate to say that Roosevelt would not have been the president he became, probably would not have been president at all, had it not been for the germ that infected him in 1921. So contends National Book Critics Circle Award winner James Tobin, author of the acclaimed Ernie Pyle's War, in his detailed account of the defining event of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's life and the greatest comeback in American political history. The name of the book is The Man He Became, How FDR Defied Polio to Win the Presidency." How did you come to this subject of looking at FDR and specifically in the terms of a man with this disease?
Well, I'd always been fascinated by FDR and by the Roosevelt family. And as I was thinking about new book projects, I got to thinking about the polio episode. And I had seen in the big biographies, the womb to tomb biographies, that episode is generally skirted over quite quickly by the biographers, which makes sense because there's so much to tell in this huge life. But I wondered whether a good narrative based on primary sources could be done. And so as I started to look at it, I was intrigued, and I realized that there were mysteries and questions that I wanted to pursue, and so it just kind of opened up in front of me.
I use this term in the introduction, as you use in the book, of the greatest comeback in American political history. Talk a little bit about what you mean by that, because we don't think of today of how much of an impact the disease had on his political aspirations.
Well, when FDR got sick, it was 1921. He was 39 years old. He had just run for the vice presidency the year before in 1920. They had lost, he and James Cox, against Orrin G. Harding and Calvin Coolidge. But FDR had campaigned spectacularly well. He had become popular across the country. And he was really one of the leading rising young figures in the party. And everybody thought, this guy is going to run for governor of New York. Someday he's going to run for president. And then this disease hit him. And, you know, he was absolutely knocked off of his feet. He couldn't even stand up, let alone walk. And it just seemed inconceivable to everybody who knew him that he could ever run for political office again, let alone the presidency. And so, and really, it was terribly impractical. I mean, even if he was going to be able to walk somehow, even with assistance, to think about a guy that disabled getting around, sort of going through the very difficult physical regimen of a nationwide political campaign, it was just inconceivable. So the fact that he did come back over a period of years, both physically and politically, I think is without any parallel in American history.
You attribute that to his great ambition and his will.
I think that's right. And there was a kind of just absolutely indefatigable optimism in FDR's character. He refused, I mean, he just refused to let anybody around him say that hope was lost, that there was no possibility of walking again, that there was no possibility of having an active political career again. And by this kind of buoyant denial, he really convinced others that it was possible. And in a time, he did recover enough of his physical ability to be able to get around, to have mobility, to be able to walk with assistance. And, I mean, that alone was a tremendous accomplishment. And through a series of appearances and a kind of adroit public relations campaign, he made himself viable politically again, although it took a number of years. And it also took some good luck. But by 1928, he was in a position to run for governor of New York, and he won. That automatically put him in the position to run for the presidency.
You make that point, that it was some good luck, and he had a lot of help, too. There was a lot of assistance.
Well, that's right, and you can't tell this story without acknowledging that FDR came from a family of considerable means. He could pay for the best medical care. He could pay for round-the-clock assistance from valets and servants. This was not a comeback that would have been available to the ordinary person with an ordinary livelihood. That there were circumstances that in FDR's situation that allowed him to do this, no question.
One of the things that you point out in the book, which I find so interesting, is that it's often thought of because he was so rarely photographed in any way showing his disability, that he was in some way trying to deceive the public about his disability. Your point that you make in the book is that he never pretended not to be a person with a significant disability. However, he was very conscious of being pitied.
That's right. I think I first really started to understand this in a couple of long conversations that I had with the Roosevelt's oldest grandson, Curtis Roosevelt, who has written a wonderful memoir himself called Too Close to the Sun.
Right.
And in talking about this, he explained to me that FDR was not interested in concealment, wasn't covering anything up. But he, first of all, was, as you say, averse to any sort of pity. He didn't want people to feel embarrassed and uncomfortable around him, which most of us are around those who are severely disabled. We don't know quite how to act. Any disabled people will tell you that they have to overcome that with other people. And secondly, FDR was always worried when he was standing up with braces, with a cane, he was always worried about falling. And he did not want to be photographed, you know, sprawled on the ground. If that happened more than a couple of times, his ability to command respect, his ability to convince people that he was actually physically capable of doing these high-powered jobs, that was going to be in doubt. The wheelchair, too, he did not want to have photographed. He didn't use a wheelchair very often during the course of a day, just to be pushed from room to room, essentially. He wasn't out in public in it anyway. But to be photographed in a wheelchair would have been to sort of show this symbol of invalidism. People did not use wheelchairs in public in the 1920s and 30s the way wheelchairs are used today. It was really a symbol of being absolutely out of commission. So that was the wrong signal to send, too. It gave a picture of ill health, and FDR was not in poor health. He just couldn't walk by himself.
And you write in the book about how his appearances in public or even privately with company were carefully managed. There was a discussion about how it would take place.
Yes. Francis Perkins, who became his Secretary of Labor, had been close friends with both Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, gives a great account of this in her oral history at Columbia University. She explains how when Roosevelt became governor, he would be at public receptions, large events, and he needed to see people, needed to talk to people, as any politician and any important person does. But he couldn't move around the room easily. So he would sit in one place, and Perkins, Eleanor Roosevelt, other aides who sort of knew how to manage this kind of situation would guide people to him, would interrupt those who were already speaking to him, would make this kind of interaction easy and possible and relieve him of the awkwardness of having to be seated in one place for a couple of hours. So they did pay attention to this kind of thing. They paid attention to how he would receive guests, even in the White House. My book doesn't cover the period of the presidency just up until then. But we know that when he was president, he would be taken by back hallways to the place where he would meet with people, again, to guard against the awkwardness of and the risk of being shifted from a wheelchair to a regular chair when there was always a chance that he would miss his grip, that his valet or assistant would miss their grip, and all of a sudden he'd be on the floor. That was an ordeal he didn't want to put others through, and he certainly didn't want to put himself through it. He had a strong sense of dignity and pride, and so he guarded against those kinds of moments. But again, there was no campaign to try and trick people into thinking that he was not crippled. Everybody knew that. He was proud of what he had accomplished, and he talked about it quite openly.
You've said that FDR became president less in spite of polio than because of polio. How so?
Well, When you look at Roosevelt's political image before he got polio, you see a guy who had a very famous name. His distant cousin Theodore had been a very popular president and had died only in 1919. Great national hero. So he had that going for him. He had a great deal of charm. He knew lots and lots of powerful people. He had been a member of the Wilson administration in his 30s. He had all of this stuff going for him. But that also meant that he kind of had this silver spoon image. He's a little bit like Mitt Romney, you know, a guy who seemed to have had everything handed to him. That, you know, got him a certain distance in politics. But especially in New York State politics, where there was a sort of a street-bred Democratic Party that he was trying to rise up in, that was not necessarily all to his advantage. So he was kind of running, he had to persuade people that he was relatable, that he was down to earth, and that wasn't easy for him. Once he had gone through this terrible ordeal of coming back from this illness, people began to see him as a figure of strength and courage. Now, he made that a part of his story during the latter 1920s, when he was beginning to come back into political viability, and then when he ran for governor of New York. He had a story to tell. One of his great political aides, Jim Farley, who had been boxing commissioner of the state of New York, remarked at one point, I think in the 32 campaign, the supreme accolade in sports writing is this guy got up off the deck and came back to win, a boxing metaphor. That was great for FDR, and that really is the way people perceived him. And after all, it's precisely what had happened. So I think he revealed himself to be this man who was different than people had considered him to be earlier. And I think that that was, at least in part, the making of his great success.
And you spoke about this earlier, but the luck involved that when he was on the deck, before he got off the deck, but when he was on the deck, the Democratic Party was really having great difficulty with the issue of prohibition, and he was sidelined and as a result didn't catch any of the shrapnel from that.
That's right. It's a tough time to be an ambitious national Democrat in the middle 1920s. The 1924 Democratic Convention was a bloodbath between Al Smith, the governor of New York, and William Gibbs McAdoo, who represented the so-called dry faction of the party. FDR was a Smith man, but he wasn't running for anything. He didn't have to get defeated in that whole melee. And by the time he was finally ready to run, 1928, Smith was running for president. Roosevelt essentially was drafted to run for governor of New York, and he managed to win, but Smith lost. And that put Roosevelt into this prime position of being the Democratic governor of New York just at the moment when the Great Depression hits in 1929, and therefore the 1932 Democratic nomination became very valuable, and he was in a very good position to run for it. He couldn't have planned any of these things. You know, nobody would say that it was his good fortune that he had polio, but these unintended consequences did ultimately work to his advantage.
James Tobin is the author of the new book, The Man He Became, How FDR Defied Polio to Win the Presidency. You actually have a date for when you believe he contracted the disease.
Right, and I'm certainly not the first to notice this date, but it's pretty clearly July 28th, 1921, when Roosevelt was at a Boy Scout campout at Bear Mountain State Park on the Hudson River, that he must have gotten the polio virus. We know this because he came down with symptoms 12 days later. That's precisely within the incubation period for polio. He was around hundreds and hundreds of Boy Scouts that day. I also found out that public health authorities in New York had, in the months prior to this, discovered that the water sources at Bear Mountain were polluted. Presence of E. coli bacteria was found. That means that there's a very good chance that the polio virus was floating around in those waters. Now, we don't know that lots of people got sick, and so probably more likely that an infected Boy Scout, you know, shook Roosevelt's hand and he contracted the virus that way. We can't know that level of detail for sure, but the timing puts it pretty clearly at that moment.
And that was possible to contract the disease from say, a scout who perhaps was carrying the virus but wasn't even sick himself.
That's right. Most people have carried the polio virus and not gotten sick at all. Our immune systems fight off the virus, even in people who haven't been vaccinated in most cases when we're little children. This is before the period of vaccination. So you can carry the virus around and not feel sick or only feel very slightly sick and yet still be contagious. So that may well have happened.
It took almost a week, just about over a week, to properly diagnose the president. What happened with the diagnosis?
Yeah, it took a couple of weeks. Well, right after this campout that FDR went to, he went back to New York City and then almost immediately went up to the Roosevelt summer home on Campobello Island, which is off the coast of the eastern tip of Maine, quite a remote place. When he became sick, they called in their local doctor who treated the family in the summertime, a guy who almost surely had never seen a case of polio. And he saw FDR right at the beginning of his symptoms, when the paralysis was not yet obvious. So he thought that Roosevelt just had a bad summer cold. A number of days passed, and the family began to suspect that it was quite clear it was something much worse than that. And a doctor was called in, a guy named William Keene, who came in from one of the resort towns down in southern Maine, an elderly surgeon, very prominent, but also not experienced with this disease. He diagnosed a lesion on the spinal cord, which seems in retrospect to have been kind of a bad error, because FDR had a bad fever, and that indicates an infectious process. So he should have been looking for some kind of viral bacterial cause. And so the proper diagnosis was delayed by yet more days until a polio expert came to see Roosevelt. And by that point, the very slim chance that he could have been treated with an anti-polio serum, which would have had to be administered very early, that was passed. And so there you have it, a couple weeks of delay before a proper diagnosis was made.
Why do you believe it had such an impact on his presidency, the will to win that office?
Well, a couple of things, and we get into the area of speculation and imponderables here. Surely FDR had a great ambition before he contracted polio, and surely he wanted to be president before that point. But what you see in this steely determination as he recovers the ability to walk with assistance and to pursue office is what seemed to me to fit the pattern of many people who are severely disabled and who refuse to drop out of life and to pursue great achievement in an all-out way as a kind of compensation for the disability. Many disabled people have gone through this kind of experience. So the will that FDR showed, I think, was which already existed in him, was magnified, was exacerbated by his condition. That and then also you see in his presidency this pattern of improvisation, of experimentation in the New Deal. That also, not to say that one causes the other, but that also reflects the method that he followed when he was ill and trying to come back from polio, which is that he didn't have any he didn't get fixed on any one particular therapy. He tried all kinds of different things until he found the things that worked, not quack remedies, but many different kinds of legitimate therapy. If one thing didn't work, he tried another. If that didn't work, he tried something else. And that's precisely the method that he applied when he became president, looking at the enormous economic problems of the country.
One more thing I want to touch on before we go, and that is how FDR's illness had such an impact on his relationship with Eleanor Roosevelt, with his wife.
Yeah. Of course, their marriage had gone through a crisis just 3 years before 1921, when Eleanor discovered that Franklin was having an affair with her social secretary, Lucy Mercer. So 1921, the marriage still very tense. The children recorded later that their parents were estranged, even though still married. Polio brought them back together for a time. Eleanor acted as his nurse, literally as his nurse, worked very closely with him, helped him to sort of plan his activities, plan his comeback, brought people in to see him, to talk politics with him. She was not convinced at all, as he was, that he could make a comeback, but she believed it was important for him to believe that. Psychologically, emotionally, it kept him interested in things. Then, when he developed his interest in Warm Springs, Georgia, and was pursuing his rehabilitation almost full-time, he was often away from home, and I think that set her free to pursue her own career in politics, not running for office, but as a powerful activist in Democratic politics throughout the 1920s, really an independent force. And so they began to lead parallel lives after polio, you know, helping each other, supporting each other, but definitely separate. And so it's the same pattern that you see once he's elected president and they're in the White House together, helping each other, supporting each other, but separate.
Well, the name of the book is The Man He Became, How FDR Defied Polio to Win the Presidency. The book is published by Simon & Schuster. James Tobin, a great pleasure to have you with us. Thank you very much for sharing your knowledge.
Thanks. I enjoyed it.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, The Man He Became, How FDR Defied Polio to Win the Presidency. The book is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.